Well, we get the second hour of the program underway this afternoon by welcoming back to the program a friend of the show who has been working on a wonderful project for a couple of years now. It has resulted in a great book called Baseball. It's More Than Statistics. It's a look through more than 120 years of baseball history. We're so happy to welcome Jim Halloran back to the show. Hello there, Jim.
Hello, Rick. It's good to be talking to you.
Well, my goodness, this has been quite a project for you. We've talked with you at various times along the way, but it's got to feel so good to see all of this now in a hardcover book that I will say is one of those books that baseball fans just want to keep on the nightstand to always refer to.
Well, that was the intent. The intent of the book, of course, is to reach out to what I call the average baseball fan. I don't get all tied in with the analytical jargon that is so popular today. I just talk about basic baseball and introduce the characters and the stories and the personalities behind baseball, which I think, that's the point of interest to many of us, is the personality of baseball, of the game and the sport.
Well, what makes the book fun is you go in chronological order, and yes, there are some statistics there, but you take a great overview of the decade and of each individual season, too, and I'm talking about, again, not just the individual performances, but the stories, which is really what makes baseball fans stay around after all these years.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big preacher on the importance of baseball as far as also the bonding experience with family. And I often talk about that. I sent you up something, it was a write-up. Someone asked me, what was my very first memory of baseball? You're talking about later. We remember your first kiss. We remember whatever and everything. What is your very first memory of baseball? And, mine was in 1951. I was a 5 or 6 year old running through my house on the way to play something, and my father grabbed me by the arm and said, "Sit down here. This is the World Series." And remember, this is 1951. It's the end of the last game of the World Series, because the great DiMaggio was coming to bat, and everyone knew it was DiMaggio's last at bat. So he said, "You sit down here and watch history." And so I did, and DiMaggio struck out. I thought that. I was thinking, what's such a big deal about that? But that was my very first memory of baseball.
Right, and you remember it all these years later. And that's, to me, that's the power of the game. Do you remember the first time you went to a major league stadium?
Yep, sure do. The old Memorial Stadium in Baltimore.
Oh, what a great ballpark that was.
Yeah. That's what we're trying to reach, the nostalgia part of it, either for the older fan or the older fan introduced the newer fan to it. But, we have all kinds of stories in here. We start every year with a story, some of them tragic, some of them humorous, not necessarily the big stories that you hear so much about. And I think one of the things that got me on this whole thing was the very first story in that book of 1903, which is the first World Series ever. But, there was a guy named Ed Delahanty. Have you heard of him?
I knew the story of Big Ed Delahanty. That's one of those I picked up reading baseball books as a young kid, and I was always fascinated about his story.
Yeah, he had the fourth highest batting average of all time. He's in the Hall of Fame, and no one, including myself, until I read it a couple of years ago, knew his story and how he mysteriously disappeared off a train and was found at the foot of Niagara Falls 2 days late. And it's a mystery. But I thought, boy, of all the stories, that's a real biggie that I had never heard of. And that kind of got me on the looking back on baseball. The history there, and really I can point to you on part of this, is that I had written that first book, Baseball in America, and you and I had talked about it. I was going around writing up the best pennant races, the World Series from 1950. And you mentioned to me that what I should do is maybe go to Substack. And I had never heard of Substack. So I got on Substack and started writing these little snippets on Substack. And a friend of mine, as a matter of fact, his name is John Holst of BaseballAlmanac.com, he told me, he said, you know, why 1950? Why don't you go back and do the entire history, the entire chronology of baseball? And so I started getting involved with it. You know, some of these things get involved with it, you can't put it down until you finish it. And this is one of them.
Well, it's such an interesting time, too, those early years of baseball. And I've talked about this with people before. But we have some great players today, probably better athletes than were around in the early part of the 20th century. But I don't know that we have, certainly don't have as many characters as there were in the game in those early years.
Yeah, I love going back. I mean, and you learn some, you know, of course I know Dusty Matheson and Ty. I know all those names. I knew a little bit about them. But I never really pictured them on the field, in the game. And that was so interesting to read more about each of those guys. And, I mean, I love the 1930s. I mean, Pepper Martin, the Gas House Gang, these were great stories.
Well, and you mentioned Christy Mathewson, and the chapter on the 1917 season was terrific in your introduction, talking about a different kind of season because so many professional baseball players ended up serving in World War One.
Yeah, they sure did. And also, World War Two. I know my son is grown, he's a middle-aged son, called me and when he was reading some of this, and said, did they really draft baseball players into the Army? He was surprised at that. And I remember in 1950, the Whiz Kids were trying to win a pennant. And their number two pitcher behind Robin Roberts is Kurt Simmons. And it's in September in a tight pennant race. And he had to report for active duty on September 15th. And they pulled him right out. You know, there was no prima donnas back then.
Well, no, and we know what happened with Ted Williams, who got called twice to service in World War II and then again in the Korean War and lost really 5 years in the prime of his career.
Yeah. Well, I wonder what his stats would have been, you know, if he had had those 5 years. He would have gone over 600 home runs for sure, I think.
Oh, easily. We're talking with Jim Halloran. His new book is entitled Baseball. It's More Than Statistics. And you mentioned that there are funny stories, there are uplifting stories, and there are some sad stories. And boy, one of the saddest kicks off the 1957 season, and that's the injury to one of the bright prospects of the game in Cleveland pitcher Herb Score.
Yeah, that was a shame. It was Gil McDougall, the Yankees, third baseman, the Yankees, did a line drive. This is Herb's rookie year. I think it's rookie year. It might have been a second year, but I think it was rookie year, hit him square in the eye, and he went down, and he was out for a while. He tried a couple comebacks, but he could never put it back together again. And the great guy that he was, he turned into a great announcer.
Right.
So, yeah, he was one of the tragic stories, and there was also. Ray Chapman of the Indians, 1920, he got hit in the temple by a fastball and died.
Right. Carl Mays hit him and was the first player and so far the only player to die from game-related injuries.
Yeah. But there were some who had, Mickey Cochran suffered a lot from being hit, but he didn't die. A lot of players were hit and they suffered because of it.
It's interesting, too, to follow the trends. Of course, the Yankees were the dominant team really throughout the 50s, late 40s, the 50s, and into the early 60s. But when that dominance ended, it created some openings for teams. And it was around the time when I first started paying attention to baseball in the mid-60s. And I loved reading about the Minnesota Twins and their remarkable 1965 team. And then that great matchup in the World Series that didn't go the way people expected between the Dodgers and the young Baltimore Orioles in 1966.
Well, that was back in, that was back when they swept the Orioles.
Yeah, with young pitchers like Jim Palmer and Wally Bunker, some great relief work from Mo Drabowski.
They called them the Kitty Corps, I think.
Right, right.
And of course, that was Koufax's last year.
That's right. Absolutely. Koufax and Drysdale anchoring that staff, but they couldn't take care of business against the Orioles. Jim, was there a favorite year for you as you researched the book? Was there one that stood out that had the most interesting stories?
Well, I think the greatest pennant race that we've seen was 1967 with your Red Sox.
Yeah, four teams going into the final weekend, all with a chance, of course, in the days when only one team made the postseason from each league.
Yeah, the suspense was just unbelievable. I also remember that because I was in the Army. I was in basic training in the Army with a fellow Red Sox. There's a relief pitcher named Bill Landis. I don't know if you remember.
Oh,
Bill
I sure do. Absolutely.
But he was a good friend of mine in the Army, and he got special privileges. The sergeant asked the captain if Landis could be excused to watch the World Series game.
Wow.
When the Red Sox beat the Twins and then had to sit back there all. Your whole area of the country, just no one was not watching that game between the follow-up game of the Tigers and the Angels.
Right. I remember as a kid, the Red Sox winning that game, but it didn't mean anything as long as the Tigers were still playing the Angels. And up here, they switched over on the radio and broadcast that Detroit California Angels game. And I still remember it was Don Mincher who hit the home run to beat the Tigers, and that clinched the pennant for the Red Sox.
Yeah. Great time. And Yastrzemski was so great in that pennant drive. Just unbelievably good.
He carried that team throughout the season, but especially in the month of September in that final weekend, where, as you point out, he went 7-for-8 in those last two games.
Yeah, absolutely fabulous. Now, that one certainly stands out, and there's so many individual plays and individual players during the World Series and so forth. Our favorite down here as far as World Series was the '91 Braves Twins World Series that Jack Morris beat John Smoltz 1-0 tenth inning of Game 7.
Oh, one of the great pitching performances in World Series history.
Yeah. That was a little heartbreaker for us. It was, remember, there were two worst the first team.
That's right. That's right. I had forgotten about that. And I actually, I went to the World Series in 1993. I drove out to Philadelphia, and I think it was Game 5, saw Curt Schilling shut out the Blue Jays to send it back to Toronto, and it was the next game in Toronto when Joe Carter hit the walk-off home run to clinch the series for Toronto.
Yeah. A great moment. We pointed out some of the World Series up there. Some of the funny moments in baseball I love doing. And one of them also happened down here. In 1985, the Braves were in a game. It went into 18 innings on 4th of July. And in the 19th inning, it was 4 a.m. in the morning. And a relief pitcher, a journeyman relief pitcher, Rick Camp, came up to bat. Rick was one of the worst batters in the game at the time, maybe in the history of baseball, I don't know. And if he hit a home run in that 19th inning to do a walk-off, and by that time there was 5,000 fans left in the ballpark, but the funny part of it was that was 4th of July. They went ahead and set off the fireworks at 4 in the morning. And boy, did that raise havoc with all the people that lived around that neighborhood. They woke up, they saw a war. They were calling the police department and everything else.
I loved it, too, when you wrote about the 2010 season. And one of my favorite players, all of us older baseball fans still think about Jamie Moyer and the success he had very late in his career.
Yeah, he just couldn't put him down. He was just one of those guys that could pitch forever. Yeah, it goes back to, you know, there's been a few of them. Remember Hoyt Wilhelm?
I sure do. I remember as a kid when, on more than one occasion, when Hoyt Wilhelm would start sometimes both ends of a doubleheader. Wilbur Wood did the same thing in later years.
Yeah. And he pitched well into his 40s. No one knew of Hoyt Wilhelm until he was, his late 20s.
Right, and you talk about guys contributing to the war effort. Hoyt Wilhelm was one of those guys. He was wounded in the Battle of the Bulge.
I didn't know that. That's a good story. That's a good story. And just like, people don't realize that Yogi Berra was in Normandy.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
He went in the Army. He was 17 years old. He was signed by the Yankees. He hadn't played yet. And he was in the Normandy battle. Got a medal for it, too.
Well, the book is just wonderful. It's called Baseball. It's more than statistics. I want to mention, too, because it's also mentioned in the newspaper article you sent me, the beautiful cover of the book, that great artwork of kids in a field playing baseball. Nothing more pure about the game than that.
Yeah, the artwork is called Baseball Beginnings. It's by a fellow named Dick Perez. It's dickperez.com, if anyone ever wants a print of it. But I stumbled across that. He was a nice gentleman. He said, sure, you go ahead and use that. And I just fell in love with it. I think it tells a lot about, you know, where we're coming from in baseball.
Well, Jim, congratulations on bringing this book to fruition. It's been, as you said, a labor of love to put it all together, but it's worth the effort for any baseball fan. They will just love this book, the stories, the memories of the game, and to learn about what happened in the game before people began to pay attention to it. You go all the way back to the very beginnings and trace more than 120 years of baseball history. It really is a wonderful work. Congratulations on that, and thanks for coming back and talking with us about it.
And let me give a short plug in. If they want to see a little bit more about it, go to baseballinamerica.com, and you'll see there's excerpts and so forth in the book.
And is the book available on Amazon?
It is available on Amazon, but you're much better to go through baseballinamerica.com and order it direct from me, I'll tell you that.
All right, do that. That's much better. Yep, that's the best way to do it right there. Well, Jim, thanks again for joining us. Congratulations on the book. Continued success and good health to you, my friend.
Well, it's always good to talk to you, Rich, and I wish you a very pleasant summer up in the beautiful part of the country that you're located.
Thank you so much, Jim. Jim Halloran with us here on Downtown